This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode number 193, final episode of 2019 of What Did You Watch This Week?
Yeah, it's January 30th. By the time I upload this, it'll be New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
We're going to sit here and record this podcast and keep looking at our phones, waiting for that message to come in that says, no work tomorrow.
Pretty much, yeah. That's pretty much what's going to happen. Yeah.
And of course, we're both state workers, so we already have Wednesday off.
Yes.
So.
And then I have vacation day on Thursday, Friday.
Nice. I took today off as a personal day.
So. Oh, nice. Oh, you had to use it before you lose it. So you did find out that you lose them.
Yes.
Aren't you glad you passed? And I was like, yes, you need to use those.
Yep. So I had the weekend, I had today, and then I'll have the next two off.
I was about to say, do you have another personal day to use up or just the one?
Nope. I already used that one.
Yeah.
I think it was something that we did.
Fun Spot? No.
No. No.
No, because that Weird Al is what I was thinking.
I got it in like June or July.
You got it in July. You got them in July when you got your promotion.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Wait, didn't you just get one then?
August. No, because I thought I was going to get one, but they said that two of them appeared in the system. So I said,
I got one. I started September 9th. I only got one.
Yep.
And then I used it when I got the flat tire on the van. Oh, hold on. Oh, it's just Jay texting me.
Be like, get off this line. We're waiting for important text to come in.
Kinda, yeah.
So we last week we had put off talking about the Mr. Robot finale because we talked for over 2 hours about everything else. Tonight I have a lot less to talk about.
I do too.
But we do have the Mr. Robot finale to talk about. We have the Mandalorian finale to talk about.
Yep. I did not watch any movies.
I watched three movies, actually. And
oh, shit. No, I did watch some movies. I watched a really good movie.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
So I didn't watch any movies turns into, oh, shit, I watched a really good movie.
Well, I have, so Christmas Eve, we had a half day. Mm-hmm. I was off Christmas Day. The day after, they gave us a holiday. And then I took a vacation day.
Mm-hmm.
So I only worked a day and a half last week.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a lot of wrestling. Well, and I was sick, so I watched a lot of wrestling, and then I watched some other stuff, and I forgot. And then Kate and I'll tell you about it in a little bit. We binge-watched, like, two shows.
Nice.
From 2000 and 2004 or 2003, PBS shows.
Oh, PBS shows?
Yeah. Only 13 like episodes total.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. So. So you want to dive into it?
Yeah.
All
right. I finished a couple of shows this week.
All right.
That show, The Politician, on Netflix that I told you about.
Yes.
Okay. I finished it. Now, last week I told you that I was about halfway through, couldn't give it a hard sell, but I think I was enjoying myself. This is the one with Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk.
Sure.
Now that it's over, now that the season is over, I'm ready to give this a good hard sell.
Oh, really?
This was actually really good, and they did something that I can't remember ever seeing before in a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there were 8 episodes in the first season, I believe.
Yep.
The 8th episode, the entire episode, was the setup to season 2. Not the last 3 minutes. Like, literally, the 8th episode could have been the first episode of season 2.
Okay.
And I don't know if they've been renewed yet or not. But it was very odd because I just, like, the 7th episode came and it went, like, Part 6 and 7 were a two-part episode. It was the assassination of the main character. That was the name of it. The assassination of whatever his name was.
Okay.
Part 1 and part 2. And at the end of episode 7, I'm like, well, where can they go from here? They kind of finished out the story. And then episode 8 starts, and it's with completely different characters. And I'm like, what is going on here? What is going on here? And then slowly the characters from the first 7 episodes get folded in to the point where by the end I went, this is fucking genius. They literally took an entire episode to set up what the whole next season is going to be about, and it was awesome.
That is very original.
It's very original, and beyond just that, this was a show that was a slow burn for me, but, you know, like I said, halfway through, I wasn't ready to hard sell it. Now I'm ready to hard sell it. I say, watch The Politician. It was fun. It had some funny parts, but they were, like, intelligent funny, highbrow funny type of thing, and I really, really enjoyed it. So I definitely am looking forward to season two, and I give this one a hard sell.
Well, that I'll have to check it out then.
I also...
It's fairly original, though, setting up the second season with introducing it by the last episode of the first season.
And, like, okay, so we've all seen that. You know, yeah. the end of a season, you know, you might get, like, the last 5 minutes or so. They're wrapping up, they're tying up loose ends, and then, like, the last 5 minutes of the episode, if you're lucky, are like, ooh, what's on the horizon? You know, Flash does that, Arrow does that. You know, they'll be like, oh, here's our happy ending, but here's one little... No, this entire episode was the setup, and it was awesome because it just – I didn't know what was going on at first, and then I'm watching it, and I'm like, this is just great. So I definitely recommend
it. Okay. Awesome. I got a bit of a sore throat tonight. Kate and I, we watched Pioneer Quest, A Year in the Real West. It was a Canadian documentary series on history television in Canada on PBS here in the States.
Okay.
It was filmed in 2000.
I was going to say, if you don't say the 1800s, then I'm not sold.
Well, no, it was filmed in 2000. There's 9 episodes. It was filmed in 2000, and then it aired. Well, it was filmed from 2000 to 2001. And there was 9 episodes. They aired like 2 in November of 2000, 2 of February 2001, 2 in April of 2001, 2 of June 2001, and then the final one in November of 2001, like a few months after. And basically, you have these two couples, and they go live up in Argyle, Manitoba,
Kanukiville,
Canada, and they live like pioneers do. Like they literally kind of drop them off, and they have a horse and a buggy, and they take it out to this pasture area, and they set up, and they have a tent that they start with, and they have to build themselves each a house and find food and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was like living like on the pioneer days in the old West, the late 1800s or mid to late 1800s, and period clothing. I mean, everything. And I gotta say, we really enjoyed the hell out of it. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. There's a younger couple.
Like a documentary.
Yeah, and this is a documentary series, but it's different because, you know, like, you know how a lot of documentary series are presented like the cameraman doesn't exist and they're just showing it to you from the point of view of the contestants and what's going on there? Mm-hmm. No, this is narrated by the whole time. And they show you the process of how they decided on the couples they are going to choose. You hear the cameraman ask them questions occasionally. The one camera guy that did the whole thing asked some questions occasionally about things. It was really well done. I was very genuinely surprised how much we enjoyed it. And it really, like Little House on the Prairie shows how rough prairie living can be, but I mean, like, they don't delve into certain things on that show, obviously, because it's family natured that they delve into on here, like, especially like the monotony of winter, how much you work so hard in the spring, summer, and fall, and then the winter, there's a lot of work to be done still, but there's a lot more of not doing anything because of the cold.
Makes sense. I know that when we lose power, and yeah. You've got candlelight and a book.
Yeah.
It's not that enjoyable.
So it was really good, though. We liked it a lot. This director that did it, Jamie Brown, he made these 4 Quest series. There was this one here, Pioneer Quest, A Year in the Real West. All these are on...
Did he make them all rhyme?
No. All of these are on Amazon Prime, if you have it. And Pioneer Quest is actually on Hulu as well.
Okay.
Just the first one. That's where we watched it. The second one's called Quest for the Bay.
And, Light of Another Day?
No, just Quest for the Bay. And it follows... We did not watch this one. But it's a 5-part series that follows... Let's see here. attempt to recreate the journey made by fur traders on the Hudson Bay Company during the 1840s, traveling from Winnipeg to Hudson Bay, covering 800 miles in a basically a 40-foot York boat.
Okay.
That was okay. We only watched kind of like the first episode, and we were like, eh. Then we watched Klondike, The Quest for Gold. And this was tough. I mean, this was how these – when the big gold rush happened up in the Klondike, this literally showed these team of four men and a woman starting in Didi, Alaska, and then trekking up to the Klondike. And the first part of it is literally a 24-mile hike, but they have 3,000 pounds of supplies. So it takes like a month to trek that 24 miles because they have to keep going back and forth.
Why don't they bring a horse?
They can't because of the terrain. It's going up over a mountain peak and everything. And because of the terrain, they can't get a horse in there. So they backpack it all up.
That doesn't sound enjoyable at all.
They slowly move the camp like 4 miles at a pop. And the woman stays at the campsite the whole time, cleaning up, cooking, doing all that stuff. And the four guys trek everything up and back, and then she moves up, and then they go up, and then they, like, it's like a slow progression of moving everything up over this mountain peak, including this canoe that's in three pieces. It's crazy. And then they finally get to the water, and they get in the lake, and now they go, like, 900 miles or whatever it is up this lake through these different streams and everything to get up to Dawson City where the gold rush is. This was like four episodes. It was really interesting. Each episode is like 47 minutes long. And this was actually really interesting. And this seemed more difficult. They were only out there for 90 days. And this seemed more difficult than the year that people lived in the prairie.
Well, yeah, because they were just living.
Right.
They weren't hauling the same shit up and down and over. No.
Yeah. It was good. There's one more series. It's called Quest for the Sea. It takes place in Newfoundland. It has to do with island life on Newfoundland and fishermen and everything. And it takes place like time frame is 1937.
Why are you saying Newfoundland?
Because it's Newfoundland.
Everyone says Newfoundland.
Apparently we're saying it wrong according to them.
That's what I was getting at was did they pronounce it that way?
Sure did. So, yeah, so we kind of watched those kind of unexpectedly and enjoyed them.
Nice.
Yeah.
It doesn't – like, that doesn't sound like the type of thing that I would want to watch. But, you know, if you guys enjoyed it, that's great.
Yeah. But I was genuinely surprised how much I enjoyed it.
It sounds – like, the work itself sounds tedious and annoying.
Oh, it's horrific.
Like, I don't get why people would do that.
To get money, the hunt of the gold. And it was nuts.
But these people that were going up there, this was like they were just recreating this.
Yeah, they were. But like there was a monetary incentive. I think they each got like $10,000 a piece.
Okay.
For doing it, the people that lived in the prairie for the year, they got $100,000.
Okay, so if you could find a job that would let you take a year off,
or you do what. Like, the older people were, like, missionaries and had their own construction business, so they could do what they wanted.
Okay, yeah.
The younger couple, the girl was a nurse, and she was able to get a year leave.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband, or boyfriend now, her husband just, as he put it, I got rid of my job.
Okay.
Oh, you want to hear something super Canadian?
Absolutely.
So after living out in the prairie for like a year,
okay,
they go up to the road where they get their supplies occasionally, this and that. A limousine picks them up. They all hop in the limo. First place they take them, because it's Canada.
Hockey bar?
Tim Hortons. They went to Tim Hortons.
Got a niner of Timbits, eh?
What else did you watch?
I finished that show Daybreak on Netflix, the one that didn't get renewed for a second season.
Mm, yeah.
You know, honestly, I really enjoyed this show, but it's not going to be for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a comic, and it feels very comic booky. You know, they've got narration, they've got cutscenes, they've got comically over-the-top characters. But I really enjoyed it because at its heart, it's a story about love, and it's a story about family, and... I dig it. You know, the premise is that the apocalypse has happened, the bombs have fallen, and all the adults have turned into what they call freakers,
yep,
which are basically like zombies that run and scream and eat flesh. You know, not typical zombies, but only adults. So if you're under 18, you're fine. Mostly. There have been a couple of them that have died. And this all takes place in one town, and the different cliques that existed before have now carved out their own parts of this town, and they, you know, have their kingdoms, and they war with each other. And
I've been meaning to ask you, is this like an updated, elongated, apocalyptic version of Lord of the Flies?
No.
Okay, no. Keep going.
No, because it's very lighthearted.
Oh, okay.
You know, one of the characters is a samurai, but he's a pacifist. So he carries a sword, and he'll brandish the sword, but he won't actually attack anybody because
sounds like pacifist. The Ninja Turtles in movies 2 and 3.
Yes. But yeah, if you want something that's just kind of fun and goofy and has some great Matthew Broderick in it, it's a lot of fun. I definitely recommend this. If you like things like Umbrella Academy or... oh, there was another one that happened. Deadly Class. It's actually much lighter than Deadly Class. But if you like those kind of shows, Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Then I think you'd like Daybreak.
Okay. Well, I mean, we could talk about Mr. Robot finale. We talked about the Mandalorian finale. Mm-hmm. I watched the first episode of You Season 2. Did you watch that yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Because I really want to rewatch the first season before I watch the second season because I love the show so much.
Okay. My reaction to the first episode of You, season 2, episode 1.
Okay.
Is very similar to how I felt after watching Saw the first time.
Oh, excellent.
So I'm a little pissed off you haven't watched it because I wanted to talk about it.
Gotcha.
So badly.
All right. Well, it's definitely on my list. It's high.
And I only watched the first episode because I was just like, I just can't watch anymore right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I watched all of Witcher.
I watched the first 4 episodes. I'm trying to space it out a little bit because I don't want to, like, just absorb it all and then...
Yep.
I could definitely see why people were complaining online.
Yes. Well, I guess let's just dive into it now.
Yeah.
Henry Cavill is Geralt of Rivera. I never watched played the video games. I never read the books. I never did any of that.
I did, and for me, it was like watching the games. I'm like, oh, he's taking his potions. Oh,
well, yep. See, to me, I as I watched it, I was like, he's going on a quest. Now he's going on a quest. This is a fucking video game we're watching.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess my biggest complaint is when you're watching the first episode, there's 2 main storylines. There's Geralt and Renfri.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And then there's, well, I guess 3 storylines. Then there's the Princess Cirilla and Queen Calathe,
mm-hmm.
or Calanthe. And then there is the Hunchback. Yes. I think of her name.
Did she even show up in the first episode?
That might have been the second episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Yennefer. Yeah, Yennefer. Okay. Never mind. So the first episode... All right, sorry. Yeah, so the first episode, the 2 main storylines are Geralt of Rivera and Renfri, and then Queen Calanthe and everything going on there. What they don't explain to you is that they're not happening at the same time.
Right.
Then you watch the second episode, and we have Yennefer, the Hunchback...
Which, didn't they do a good job of making her look just gross?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Bangs did a lot for that.
The bangs, the Hunchback, the way they messed up her face.
She always had her jaw off to the side.
Yeah, the way they messed up her face. It was really awesome.
Yeah.
So we see more of Ciri's story.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Geralt's story. And then we have Yennefer's story.
Yep.
And what they don't fucking tell you is that these stories are happening 30 years apart.
Right. And the thing is, by the time you reach the 4th episode, which is where I am, you can plainly see that. Because in the very first episode, like, no spoilers, but in the very first episode, the queen dies. Like,
yes.
Like, her kingdom gets overrun by Nilfgaard. They raise the place, and she dies. And then in the 4th episode, she comes in off the battlefield. Oh, just killed some guys. I'm feeling pretty good. And look, there's my daughter.
There's her husband who took an arrow in the eye.
Right.
Who, by the way, they're not married in this episode.
Right, in the 4th one.
And yeah. At the beginning
and,
of it.
And here's my daughter. Oh, wait, didn't we hear that she was dead?
Yeah. And
she
and died you have a granddaughter.
So it's not like they're trying to hide it. So we really could have benefited from a simple, you know, past, present, future.
It just
like so, a title card.
So I did find that annoying.
Yeah.
And to keep going real quick. Okay. So first of all, in episode 4, mm-hmm. you have where Calanthe's daughter, Pavetta, mm-hmm. Is in love with Dooney, this guy that's clearly been cursed, but he looks like a fucking hedgehog or yep. something. And Geralt won't kill him because he's been cursed. Geralt has a code. He's like, yeah. This isn't a monster. This is a guy that's been cursed. Right. Like,
this is a human man.
Yeah, like he's had a rough go with things.
Yep.
And Dooney uses the gift of, what's it, the Law of Surprise.
Law of Surprise.
To claim Pavetta as his bride.
Yeah.
And so,
which is a real thing.
Yeah, and everyone's like, Calanthe, you have to honor it. I mean, that's tradition. It's destiny. It's
destiny. Pavetta, they all throw destiny out there.
Yeah, and then when Pavetta shows that she has powers, mm-hmm. Mutant powers, whatever it is, then her mother kind of relents, and you're watching it. And then they get married, and Dooney turns to a mortal because the curse is broken. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I must pay you. And he's like, no, I can't be paid. And he went,
he's like, I saved your life. That's just the right thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I can't have this whole hoarding over my head. And in my, as soon as he said that, I went, oh, for fuck's sake. I felt like when you leaned next to me mm-hmm. at the village and went, it takes place now.
Yeah.
You know? I went, she's pregnant. He's going to call the Law of Surprise. And that's why he's going to be attached to the kid. Oh, I call the Law of Supplies. And Calanthe's like, no! And then Pavetta, on cue, throws up. Because, you know, morning sickness happens on a whim like that.
Right.
And then I did like Garrett's response of, fuck. And then that's the end of the episode.
Yep. He's just, fuck.
Yeah. And he turns and walks off. So that was kind of like, ugh. So even with that frustration of the timelines, mm-hmm. I love the show. I really do like, you got what, five, six, seven, eight? Yeah.
Correct.
I can't wait for you to watch it.
Yeah. Like I said, I want to space it out because I am enjoying it so much. Yeah. For me, having played the games, there's a lot in there, like, basically, there were 3 Witcher games so far. I don't think Gwent. If anybody out there wants to, oh, there's 4 games because Gwent. Fuck you. Gwent is not a real game.
Okay.
Gwent is the card game that they play in the taverns, and people liked it so much as a mini game that they did a spin-off of it. It's not a real Witcher game. Okay. That being said, the first 2 Witcher games, nobody cares about. It was the third one that everybody goes apeshit for.
Yeah.
And in the beginning of the third one, Geralt is training Ciri.
Okay.
And I don't know if this story is going to keep track with The Witcher 3, but Geralt and Vesemir, who yeah. they've already talked, they said that in Season 2 they might be bringing on Vesemir, and Mark Hamill has expressed some interest in playing him. Vesemir is an older Witcher.
Okay.
He's an aged Witcher, even though they don't age the same way. But Vesemir and Geralt are training Ciri at Kaer Morhen, which is interesting because, you know, he even says here in the show that they can't make any more Witchers because Kaer Morhen was sacked.
Yeah.
I find it very interesting because they're doing a lot to honor the work and make it feel like a game.
Yeah.
I love the first episode, the interaction where he went to the sorcerer in the tower.
Yes.
And, you know, the guy had basically illusions up of the naked women and men taking care of the place. He's like, this woman's trying to kill me. You got to go kill her first. And he's like, what have you done to deserve this? And he's like, it doesn't matter. I'm telling you to go kill her. He's like, you're probably an asshole. So then he goes and finds the woman, and he's like, are you really trying to kill him? And she's like,
yeah,
he's an asshole. I want to kill him. And he's like, well, you shouldn't kill people. And she's like, I don't fucking care. Just stay out of my way. And he's like, but I heard you're a monster. So it, like, all the quests in the game were like that. You know, it was like, somebody says, oh, this ghost is haunting me, you know, and I want you to get rid of it. Well, come to find out, the ghost is haunting you because you raped her and then hung her and threw her down a well and left her there. So, yeah, she's pretty pissed at you.
the ring.
I'm gonna let her go. I'm gonna let her sack it. So it's very interesting. There's a lot of ambiguity, as you saw.
I mean, okay, so the battle scene, see, I kind of really wish I would have watched this show 1 week at a time so I had a new episode to talk about each week.
That's why I stopped. I had to.
And I think that's what I want to do with you. Once you get to watching you...
Let's do one a week.
Burn through the first season, and then let's just talk about one episode a week, because having that to talk about, like, The Mandalorian and stuff like that, I find it more interesting.
It is.
And you absorb the show more.
Yes.
And we can talk about it more. Like, to sit down, like, if you had watched the whole thing of The Witcher, and I watched the whole thing of The Witcher... I can't sit down and break down eight episodes. It blurs the lines too much.
But the fourth episode is definitely worth breaking down, like you said, you know?
Yeah.
There was a lot going on there. See, I didn't have the same reaction you did to the law of surprise.
Yeah.
You know, basically the law of surprise states when you get home.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, the law of surprise didn't bother me. It was like, oh, shit, she's pregnant.
Right.
And that's
right.
How he... You know, it just became predictable.
Yeah.
So it didn't. The law of surprise didn't bother me. It gotcha. Made sense. Like, I actually thought that was like, because like he goes, I don't care about some crops. I didn't know you. You know what I mean? Like, he really belittled it. And what it was is Dooney didn't know Pavetta was pregnant.
Right. And I love that. But there were so many things like, okay, Yennefer's story.
Yeah.
I love that it wasn't like one episode.
Oh, no.
We actually saw it draw out. We saw that she sucked and she sucked and she sucked and all these other girls were better. And their reward for being better was to be turned into eels and cast in there to feed the rest of the magic tower.
But why? Because they were that good?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that crazy?
Nobody is trustful in that world.
None whatsoever.
They don't want the chance that somebody might usurp them. They did a good job in the games. They always talked about how witchers can't have children because of the mutations they go through. And witches can't have children either. They were really graphic about that with Yen. Like, when they strapped her down and he pulled out everything
that
inside,
was, but that
the,
was
the tubes and everything.
Well, okay, she removed the fallopian tubes in the uterus and everything, but that was to heal her hunchback and face.
It was the process of enchanting her to make her a different person. And
so that's done no matter what.
Right.
Oh, I thought that was done strictly like as a to get rid of her hunchback and cure her face and make her gorgeous now.
Nope. The enchantment process, they have to remove that. So witches can never have children and witchers can never have children either. So they're a great team.
Mm.
I really enjoyed the show. I know in the beginning people were like, oh, is this the next Game of Thrones? Not even close. Game of Thrones was political, and it was so far spread.
But if you liked the period, like Game of Thrones period and that type of thing, and then, ultra-violence, then yes, this is great.
Some of the fight scenes were phenomenal.
The first episode, when...
Taking out the guys in town?
When Geralt's battling Renfri's henchmen, if you will, holy cow, that was awesome.
Right? Loved it.
Yeah, and then when he fights her, and you can tell he's trying to hold back... But then finally he's like, well, I can't because you're not going to stop, so I guess I just need to kill you.
Yep. Which was interesting.
In an episode you haven't seen yet, there is some graphic violence.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I do love the graphic violence. A couple of other things that they seem to be staying true to. I really like the potions. You know, those were always a thing.
They never really explained them.
Nope. Some of them that you would use were things like a cat's eye that would let you see in the dark, which I assume when he went after the Striga, he was down that dark crypt. You know, that was one of them. But basically, they were different tonics that you would ingest so that you could have enhanced abilities for, survival, combat, enhanced endurance, healing quickly like he did, when the guys were stabbing him. Stuff like that to make you more powerful. The thing is, A, they're toxic. Their bodies can take it, but they can only take so much of it. If they ingest too many of those potions at a time, it can cause their body to shut down.
Hmm.
And B, they won't work on a normal human. They'd be like poison to somebody. So it's very interesting.
I think you must have seen it already. The episode with the... Oh, I think you said the Striga.
The Striga. God, that was good. That's what I love about the monsters in this. It's not just... It's like Supernatural. You know, there's not just, yes. Oh, it's a werewolf. Let's go shoot it with a silver bullet and leave it in the woods. You know, there's an actual story behind here.
Yeah, that was a great episode. And then, like you said, the fight with the Striga.
Yeah.
And
think about it. It was born because they buried the mother and the baby ate its way out of the womb.
Yeah.
And it lived in that crypt and grew. Like, oh.
It was kind of cursed from birth.
Yep.
Yep. And then turns into a monster.
Yep.
When the moon goes down. Or when the moon's full, I mean.
Yep, when the moon comes up.
Yeah.
And then she has to be back in her crypt by the time sun comes up or the curse is broken.
Yeah.
But she doesn't want to be, you know, she doesn't want the curse broken.
So. Well, she doesn't know that the curse will be broken. My thought is that she's just thinking, I'll die.
Right.
This is what I have to do.
Yep.
That was a great episode.
Yeah. Oh. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to spacing it. I don't know if I'll do like one a week with that one, but you know, I'm definitely enjoying the slow burn.
So you season 2, episode 1, I'll just say, yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited for that show. That is like a non-background show. I want to have my full.
Oh, focus no. That's you need to watch it. Yeah. You need to watch it. Absolutely, you need to watch it.
The only other two TV things that I watched, aside from, well, it was Mr. Robot finale, Mandalorian finale, but yeah. I did finally watch the last two episodes of The Movies That Made Us.
I haven't watched them yet.
So I've now seen Dirty Dancing and Ghostbusters.
Okay, so
I know you've seen Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, so Dirty Dancing.
It was fun to see that Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze hated each other because of Red Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, let me go talk to her. And half an hour later, they both came out crying. And they're like, let's do it.
And then they show the clips from Red Dawn of her dying, getting shot and everything. Like, yeah. I loved how they would show movie clips. Like,
yeah.
But it's amazing the lake is gone.
Yeah. That they're standing out there. Yeah. They've got, like, the memorial rock and everything. And it's gone.
Lake's gone. The resort's still there.
But they still had the cairn that they, or the platform that they had built.
Yes.
That he could lift her up on.
Yeah. It's like, I didn't realize this, but like the lodge, the gazebo, the grounds, that was in one location, and then like
in a different state.
Yeah, and then the staff quarters was in a completely different state.
Yep. Yeah, it was like Virginia and North Carolina.
Yeah, or I mean, like it was kind of crazy how they did that.
And they showed how like they used the same walkway lights.
Yes.
They picked them up from one area, took them to the next one.
And they filmed everything at the resort. Then they went over and filmed everything they needed to film over there. And so like that big like romantic dance scene or something like that they have is the first thing they filmed.
Yep.
You know, like kind of crazy. The whole thing, the casting of it, the production companies,
yep.
You know, that... You know, how the whole thing came about was kind of amazing. And then the fact that the company that released it, that home video company that kind of...
Oh, Vestron.
Vestra, whatever it was. How they got screwed royally on the royalties on that.
And they went out of business.
They get nothing. They basically got nothing.
Yep.
And like the writer and the writer, producer, director girl was just like, oh, I gave us everything and gave everybody else like nothing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. She's like, I took care of us. That was my goal.
Yep. But, fascinating story.
Yes. Ghostbusters, you got to check it out.
Oh, I'm going to. I'll probably end up watching them before watching the movies.
The only thing that I'll say about it, because I don't want to go too deep into it, but right in the beginning, they're talking to Dan Aykroyd because he's the one that wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that originally he wrote that script specifically for himself, John Belushi,
mm-hmm.
and Eddie Murphy.
Yep.
And he was writing John Belushi. He was writing one of the pages when he got the call that Belushi was dead. And he was just like devastated. You know, that was one of his best friends. And he was just like, what am I going to do? He had been writing it specifically for him. Because, you know, Blues Brothers, they and then Eddie Murphy passed. You know, he wanted nothing to do with it.
I wonder if he kicks himself in the ass for it.
I don't know.
I mean, it's not like he struggled.
Right.
Or, you know.
Right.
Didn't make out. It's not like Daniel Stern, who really didn't do much anything else besides Home Alone, and the narrator guy for Wonder Years.
Yeah. That's it for TV for me, other than those two shows I'm going to talk about.
I watched something called The Inside Man.
I've heard of that.
Not the not the one with, I can't think of his name now.
Woody Woodpecker?
Nope. It doesn't matter. Oh, I probably never even talked about that because I did watch that sequel like a long time ago. Hold on. The Inside Man.
Holding on.
2006, starring Denzel Washington and Clive Owen.
Okay.
And Jodie Foster. They did a direct-to-video sequel called, or direct-to-Netflix sequel called Inside Man, Most Wanted.
Oh, Jesus.
And it starred Amil Amen, Ray Sori, Roxanne McKee, and Urs Rec. It was okay.
All right.
It was okay. No, this was called The Inside Man, not just Inside Man.
Okay.
It was a 12-part series about a guy who infiltrates company and becomes part of their IT security. And essentially we learned all about security.
Dude.
And security.
Seriously? Okay. All right. First off, the production value was phenomenal. I mean, that was some awesome production value. And I legitimately can't wait to see what happens in the next season. But dude, come on. The reason Mike's laughing so hard, choking, is because this was mandatory training from our IT department that was sent to us at work. Every state employee had to go through this training. And like I said, it was phenomenal production value.
Okay.
Like, this was right up there with a TV show.
I watched it today. It's for our security awareness. And I'm like, this is 12 parts? And they're like 7-8 minutes a piece? This is absurd.
And you got sucked right in.
I did, actually.
It was awesome.
It was really good. Like it's a British show. Mm-hmm. If you know, made in England, and they actually tell a story through it,
mm-hmm,
of this guy who legit infiltrates his company because there's going to be a merger, and he's
brilliantly
like,
too.
Yeah, and he's being paid to find out all the ifs, ands, or buts, and the money involved, and this, that, and everything to sell. I mean, it was surprisingly really good.
Yeah. Like
they clearly had a decent budget for this.
Yeah. Like, they had an office staff. They had repeat players. Like, again, the production value was right up there that it was like a TV show.
I mean, it was legit like an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I've watched – usually you watch these security training things and you're like, this is such garbage. I've zoned this out. Let's just hope I pass the test.
I would never do this. Why are they trying to tell me this?
Right.
This one actually had legitimate
pointers.
This was
surprisingly entertaining.
Dumpster diving.
Yeah.
Passwords and phishing scams.
And told a good story. And they would work the bullet points into the episodes very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it left you on a cliffhanger.
Yes. Every time. They'd be like, next time on The Inside Man. You're like,
but even
I want to see the next
one. Even the final episode left you on a cliffhanger.
Yes.
You know, there's another person
that's infiltrating
the office. Yeah, so
the only thing that took me out of it completely.
I didn't know if you had watched it yet or not, because we have another 39 days to do it. So I was like,
oh, no.
Because if you haven't seen this, you will.
I legitimately looked at it and went, well, I'm going to get paid to kill an hour and a half, 2 hours.
That's what I did today. I brought my noise-canceling earphones and put them on and just went, well, I'm going to watch this today.
I'm
going to end this suffering.
The one thing that killed me, took me right out of it, was towards the end, the completely separate training thing that was very similar to what I did in Dispatch when I was learning stuff there, you know?
There was
all text on the screen.
There was three modules you had to complete in between. One was a phishing game where you had to, like, say, is this phishing, is this not? One was, like, a password game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one was about PII.
Yeah. And the PII one, they got it from a different company, obviously.
Yes. And that was fucking horrific.
Yep.
And that is what I'm used to the whole training being like.
Exactly. That's typical training.
Where it's just painful. And you have to do the quiz like three times because you weren't actually paying attention because you zoned out.
Yeah.
And didn't hear anything because it was so just god-awful.
Exactly.
So I watched that. What'd you watch for movies?
I watched three of them.
Yeah.
I watched Dolomite Is My Name.
Okay.
That was pretty badass.
Wasn't it good?
I mean,
it was absurd, but wasn't it good?
It was completely absurd, but it was Eddie Murphy at his Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
I don't know how many F-bombs they dropped in here. How many motherfuckers were dropped
in here? Oh, God,
so
many.
You like how I did that F-bomb with that motherfucker? Yes. And I kept waiting for the bum to show back up and be like, you stole my material.
Me too.
I kept waiting for him to get turned on, and it never happened.
Nope, not at all. And it was hilarious because there was there's the scene where there were several times when they were filming the movie in the movie.
Yes.
Where I then went and watched that part of the movie, like on like a YouTube or something, and it was pretty damn similar to being that bad. Yeah.
This was blaxploitation ratcheted up.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a blaxploitation movie about making a blaxploitation movie.
And he really did have like an all-white crew of guys that worked on the movie with them, like new, you know, film students, fresh off the boat, you know, like never really done this before. This is kind of their first time doing it type of thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
All-star cast.
Yeah. Oh, Wesley Snipes was in it. You know, and I can't believe Arsenio Hall wasn't in it.
I thought he was.
Was he?
I think he was.
Shit. Snoop Dogg was in it, yeah.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes was in it, yeah.
I think that's who I was thinking of, not Arsenio. I thoroughly enjoyed this. I thought that it was a lot of fun, had a good story. But again, I'm not that I'm missing it. I just kept waiting for the bum to show up and be like, that's my jokes, that's my material, because that was his, you know, cornerstone.
Oh, he clearly ripped him off,
100%.
Speaking of Eddie Murphy, he hosted Saturday Night Live.
Oh, my God.
And he brought back, I know we talked about it last week, but he had the Velvet Jones?
Velvet Jones.
Velvet Jones on Black Jeopardy, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, Gumby. I mean, he brought back Buckwheat. He brought back so many of his original characters.
Uh-huh.
But Dolomite is his name is what inspired him to want to get back to comedy, doing stand-up again, to go back to doing these movies. And Dolomite is his name is why we got Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live, why we're getting Coming to America 2, why we're getting Beverly Hills Cop 4. And I'm just, Dolomite was surprisingly good.
It was. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
I have not watched Six Underground yet. I went to watch it a couple of times, and I just went, not today. Not today.
I need to.
I know.
So, what did you watch for a movie?
I watched Steel Rain.
Is that REIGN?
No, REIN. It has to do with a bomb. It is a South Korean action thriller.
Okay.
Apparently, it came out in South Korea in 2017. Hit Netflix worldwide 2018. It's been on my list for quite some time. Finally got around to watching it. This is excellent.
Really?
Yes. It is a, I'm not going to say political, even though it is political, but essentially the storyline is it's an attempted coup on North Korea.
Okay.
And they never say, you know, Kim Jong-il, whatever his name is. They just call him their number one.
Okay.
Or, you know, and you never see his face, but essentially someone tries a coup on North Korea to start start World War III and this and that. And you have this North Korean agent and he ends up working with a South Korean guy because, you know, there's a lot of shit going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a lot of the thing. You do get to see a sampling of like North Korean lifestyle and how kind of brainwashed the whole country is.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And, it's insane.
And, but this was actually really, really, really good. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Good.
Because it was a good, like, spy thriller. Good psychological spy thriller. With, like, military stuff, some fighting, some gun shooting. I mean, it was really enjoyable.
Good.
It's in Korean, of course. So it's subtitled. There is some English in it at times. Thank God when the South Korean guy speaks English, they still have his subtitles on the screen because it is not good English.
and they probably realized that and said, let's just leave these in here.
But no, it's good action. It's good action. It's great storytelling. I mean, I really, really enjoyed it.
Nice.
It's 2.5 hours long almost.
Wow.
Yeah. 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed the hell out of it. And apparently won a couple awards. So.
Well, that's good.
Yep. Yeah. What other movies did you watch?
Well, I watched Overlord.
Oh, shit. I watched that a long-ass time ago.
Yeah, I wanted to go see it in the theater. Never got around to it.
Yeah.
And it happened to pop up on, I think, like, I was just thumbing through Amazon Prime, and it was like, oh, you can watch this? I'm like, fuck, I'll watch it.
Yeah, it's the D-Day World War II flick with zombies, basically.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is it starts off like a typical World War II flick, very graphic. You know, they're all in the... Mm-hmm. The plane, and then the anti-aircraft fire starts firing up at them and shreds those guys.
Yep.
They jump out. Some of them make it. Some of them don't. But then, yeah, like, it seems like it's just a war movie until it's not.
Yeah.
And they're in this small village where it turns out the Germans have been doing some experimentation on the populace. And they're
Which has always been the rumor that it happened.
Yep.
Yep.
And they're coming up with an injection that essentially turns, I hesitate to say zombie.
I would not say zombie either.
You can't die traditionally. Like,
right.
They blow a hole in some guy's chest and he just gets back up, snap his neck. No, he keeps coming. Stronger, fiercer, more out of control, rage filled. And, they make it their mission to take down the tower, which was their whole mission in the first place.
Yep.
But they want to take it down from the inside, so they bury all that stuff.
Yes.
It's decent.
They don't want anyone getting their hands on it.
Right.
Either side.
As he said, we shouldn't even have this.
Yep. I thought it was decent, yeah.
It was decent. It's nothing that I'd be like, oh, this is so good, you've got to watch it. But, you know, I enjoyed what I watched. Yeah, if you like a good war movie or a good supernatural kind of thing, you might enjoy this. I don't know. The last movie that I watched it right before I came over here because I remembered a conversation that we had on Twitter a little while ago where Martin was giving us some suggestions. And he said that we had to get into Carriers on Netflix.
Oh, okay. It's not that movie, Carriers. It's a TV show.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because I looked up Carriers on IMDb, and I couldn't find anything other than the movie.
Because when I was talking, I think I mentioned, oh, do you mean this movie? And he was like, no, I think it's a TV show or something.
He might have the wrong name, because I couldn't find anything other than the movie.
Yeah, which
is...
Not good.
No. Thank you. Okay, so I'm sitting there, I'm like, how do I tell Martin this wasn't very good?
When you read it, it's like, oh, this seems really good. And then it's not.
Well, I'm like, oh, Chris Pine, Chris Maloney, Piper Perabo, Emily Van Camp. I'm like, yeah, this is going to be good. And it seemed like, you know, The Hills Have Eyes meets, you know, right from the jump, like these guys are driving down the road, drinking and driving. Oh, we stole a car. We're going to the ocean. And then Chris Maloney has his vehicle parked in the middle of the road and he won't let him go by because he needs gas. And they're like, oh, his daughter's infected. Quick, run. So they drive away real fast. He tries to smash the window out. They get like 100 feet down the road and realize they ripped out their oil pan, so their car is dead. And they're like, well, let's walk back up there with the gas that we've got and use his vehicle. Because they have a gun with them, of course. And it just goes downhill from there. So, Martin, if you're listening, I don't know if Carriers is the name of the show that you were talking about. Because, again, I looked on IMDb. I didn't see anything other than the movie.
Yeah. There's the film, and that's from...
And when I went on Netflix, I tried Carriers as well, and I didn't come up with anything other than that movie. So let us know. Like, yeah. So that's what I watched.
Yeah, the only Carrier TV series that comes up is the 2008 documentary about U.S. Navy aircraft carrier.
I don't think that would be something that he would suggest to us.
Yeah.
So, you got any other movies?
No.
One trailer.
Yeah, I did watch that trailer.
That's going to be an interesting movie. Okay. I kind of want to see it. This is Promising Young Woman.
The trailer starts off really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets really plain and boring.
You think so?
It gets not boring, but just get really... It goes from being a really, like, oh, this looks awesome. I never not wanted to watch it, mm-hmm. but then the trailer just kind of, I don't know, felt like it flipped and became kind of like, oh, is this a low-budget flick that's going to suck?
In the beginning, it felt like it was a horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a suspense movie. Basically, she's a woman who every night she goes to a bar and acts like she's knocked down drunk.
Yeah.
And waits for some guy to offer to take her home. And then
if he takes
them try to rape her.
And then she does something. We don't know what, but she checks off her book.
Well, she has a book with hash marks in it.
Yeah.
And they're red ones and black ones. And we don't know, like, yeah. but she said that, you know, she's waiting for a good guy. And they're all good guys.
Yeah.
But it turns, then I think maybe where it lost it for you was that we find out halfway through the trailer that the reason she's doing this is because she was on the school campus and got sexually assaulted.
Nope.
Nobody believed her. So, you know, she felt like she had to go out and do something.
No, it wasn't the story that lost me. It was the presentation of it.
Okay.
And it's like they made it look from like this really cool kind of like psychological movie to really kind of like the music made it. The music didn't fit, maybe.
Okay.
And it just, I don't know. It just went from being like a really cool looking movie to like kind of like a cheesy, low budget, like dumb movie. But like with the music and the presentation.
Okay.
But if you look past that and just watch the story, I watched the trailer twice.
Yeah.
And you just look at the story they're presenting, mm-hmm. it looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
And I do want to see it. I just feel like it's just a badly done trailer.
Gotcha. And those do happen quite often.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. That was the only trailer that I had. Mm-hmm. Got a couple of pieces of news.
Sure.
Kind of teeing up what we're going to be talking about. The Mandalorian Season 2 arrives fall of 2020.
Yep.
So that's exciting. And Christmas Eve, Ryan Reynolds was on a news show, confirmed that Deadpool 3 is being worked on right now at Marvel Studios.
Okay.
So we still don't know if that means that it will be a PG-13 or if they're going to let him stay R like they originally said they were going to. But if it's being worked on at Marvel Studios, then that means that it's being folded into the MCU.
Yep.
Which I'm all about. Even if the first movie, you know, Deadpool 3, is just him joking about how it's about time, maybe the budget will be bigger. I mean, it's just, it's going to be hilarious.
I read that Marvel's really trying to get Hugh Jackman to come back as Wolverine. Trying really hard to get him to come back as Wolverine.
I could dig it. I think fans would like to see that.
Yeah.
Yep. So, other than that, all I got is the Mr. Robot series finale and the Mandalorian season finale.
Yeah, well, let's jump into it.
All right.
Spoiler country ahead.
That's right. This is the big one, guys.
Let's go with the Mandalorian.
All right.
So this was a bit of an extended episode. I think it was like 40 minutes long instead of like your late 20s, early 30s. So I mean, it was a little bit longer.
Kind of like us.
Yeah.
40-something.
Right. I loved the opening scene, basically, where after they do the recap and you see the two stormtroopers sitting around waiting with the baby and they're just chatting back and forth.
Okay. So first off, this was the greatest scene that they've had yet. I love when one of the scout troopers pulled out his blaster to aim at the thing on the ground and couldn't hit it for shit.
Yeah.
Just to drive it home. Now, did you realize, or did you look it up afterwards?
No.
Jason Sudeikis and Adam Pauly.
That makes sense, yep.
And I had to pause it and look it up, and then I could hear their voices a little bit.
Yep.
The one who kept hitting Baby Yoda was Jason Sudeikis.
No doubt. He definitely
the
was.
The bigger asshole of the two. And then Adam Pauly, the other one, you know, I just want to see him. I just want to take a look at it. Watch it again and know that it's their voices and picture them under those helmets. You're going to love it. They weren't even, like, in the credit roll at the end when it said, you know, like, first appearing.
Yeah.
It was Giancarlo Esposito. It wasn't them. Right. So, yeah.
I thought that scene was awesome.
Loved it.
IG-11 shows up, basically kills them both and takes the baby back.
Yeah. He's like, my primary objective is to care for the baby.
I'm a nanny.
Yep.
I have to take care of the baby.
Yep.
And then he jumps on the speeder bike and heads into town to rescue the day.
And we get to see the ever cute Baby Yoda like screaming as he's riding really fast.
Yeah.
Yay!
And IG-11 just be the killing machine that he is.
Yep.
A lot, which was awesome.
He did get a lot of killing in here for being a reprogrammed nanny.
because he's protecting the child.
Right. I love at the one point when he's heading right into the crowd and they're all shooting at him and like his torso flips around so the baby's behind him.
Yes.
And then he just keeps on firing.
Yes. Yeah, the IG-11 rescues everybody. They get back into the bar that they're in, the cantina, whatever it is. And the Mandalorian's got a head injury after the scuffle.
Mm-hmm.
Because they went out to get, you know, rescue everybody. And IG-11's now cutting the grate open so they can get to the sewer system to escape. Mandalorian's going to stay behind because he's injured. What's her name? Dune there tries to take
Cara Dune.
Cara Dune, thank you. Tries to take his helmet off to rescue him. He's like, no, you can't.
Yeah,
I can't take my. I'll be breaking the creed, but you're gonna die. And he's just like, that's the way it is.
I really like the lead up to this when you know he called in when Moff Gideon called in the E-Web repeater.
Yes,
and he was like, yeah, you obviously know. And he like named them. You know, he's like, Cara Dune, the Republic commando, probably saw several swaths of her teammates cut down by this as they were trying to land. And you know what this is, Din.
Yeah.
Jerso?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So he knows all of them.
Yeah.
Called them all out by name. Set up that E-Web repeater and went to town on it.
Well, basically said, I'm giving you until dark to surrender.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to level you.
Yep. Because I can.
They escape. Oh, they send in. Well, no, after he says all that, then IG-11 shows up. We have the big shootout. Mandalorian turns the gun around on him, and he gets blasted with that thing. And that's when he causes his head injury.
Yep. Because the Moff is smart. He's like, oh, I'm not just going to shoot at him and watch it bounce off the Beskar.
Yeah.
I'm going to shoot the power pack for the E-Web.
Exactly.
Yep.
And the stormtrooper with the flamethrower comes in. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Bad to the ass.
Yep.
And then Baby Yoda uses his powers, uses the force mm-hmm. to stop the flame and bounce it back at the stormtrooper. That was pretty violent. There's a lot of violence in this.
There was a lot of violence. Oh, yeah. Watching him, like, hold off the... Yeah.
Yeah.
It was badass.
Yeah. And then Cara Dune takes the child and Carga Reef there. They head down the sewers. IG-11's going to join them, and she's like, make sure that you save him. And he's like, I'm going to take your helmet off. You can't. No living creature can see my face. Good thing I'm not a living creature. And we get to see the Mandalorian's face. And what I thought was cool as shit, it's really his voice that they're using. It's not like it's someone else's voice.
Right.
That's his voice. It's just...
Did you immediately look at him and go, oh, he's the bad guy in Wonder Woman 84?
No, I knew that already.
I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of, you know, jokes and shit about that when the movie comes out.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. They're going to be like, where's Baby Yoda? He was a lot nicer when he was the Mandalorian.
But he uses, what is it, the Bacta, or whatever it is, to fix his head, basically, and rescues him. And then, because I was like...
This is a concentrated Bacta spray.
They can't kill the Mandalorian!
He's literally the title character.
And they head down into the sewers, and then they're going along, and then they find piles of Mandalorian armor.
Mm-hmm. All piled in, like, they've been carefully put into piles.
Yep. I mean, are we to believe that they're all dead?
Yes. Yeah, and she said that. You know, the armorer actually said that the Empire came down into the tunnels. You know, they, once you left, we had changed ourselves, the Empire showed up and they came looking. And I don't know that they came into the tunnels specifically, but they killed the Mandalorians. They looked for them and they killed a bunch of them. He asked if all of them got away or if some of them got away. And she's like, I hope so. I hope some of them got away, but we won't know.
So she makes him his crest because he's a clan of two.
Yep.
Basically, he says the child.
The Mudhorn.
Yeah. The what?
The Mudhorn. That's,
yeah.
That was going to be his crest. And he was like, no, I had help with it. And she's like, oh, this is your help? Well, then, yeah.
Yeah, you're a clan of two. You're basically the child's father, and you're responsible for him until you find his people.
Yep.
His race. Who are they? I don't know.
Nobody does.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Here, take the jetpack. Were you annoyed that she was like, you need to, it's going to take time for you to learn it. You need to practice and train.
Well, she said, did you ever train with it? And he said, yes, when I was younger.
Okay.
And she's like, well, you're going to need to practice it.
Okay. Because he's
yes.
picked up on real quick.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. What'd you think of R2-D2 with arms and, arms and legs?
Standing up there and he's like, hello. Yeah, that was pretty badass. I liked it.
And they get to the lava river, get on the boat, head out.
Yep. And his scanners pick up that, you know, the Imperials are all just waiting there at the opening and they're just going to rip them apart.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, we can't take that many of them. And at first I was like, there's maybe a dozen there. You've taken out more than that. Yep. But I thought, you know, they're being funneled right through.
They're Coke bottled. They're trapped.
Exactly.
You know,
and they can't move any faster than the boat.
And the boat's not going to go back.
Right. There's no cover to take. So they're basically just standing there like, we're dead.
Yep.
So IG-11 says, my primary directive is to care for the baby. And my secondary directive says I cannot be captured. I must self-destruct. That's still in my programming. And he's like, yeah, but you got to take care of the baby as your primary. He goes, will you take care of the baby? And he's like, yes. And he goes, then my primary directive is taken care of. I can't be captured. I got to go blow up.
And he's like, but no, you can't do this. And I like what IG-11 then says, look, I've factored everything. I've run all the numbers. I've run all the scenarios. There is no scenario where we make it out of here alive. So for me to do my primary objective, which is take care of the child, I must then override that with my secondary objective, which is to self-destruct, because that is the only way we can protect the child.
Right.
In this scenario.
Yep.
And then, like, the Mandalorian basically says, like, yeah, but you can't. And he says, like, you're not supposed to care. The IG-11 told him, like, you're not supposed to care about me. He's like, I don't. Well, your voice tells me otherwise.
Yeah, exactly.
And IG-11 just jumps in the lava and walks out. Boom! Wrecks a shit ton of stormtroopers.
Yep.
And then Moff Gideon shows up in his freaking TIE fighter. And the Mandalorian takes his backy pack and goes up there and brings him down. And Cara Dune's going to stay behind with Karga.
Which, did that seem a little rushed?
Man.
They're like, oh, we cleared everybody off the planet. Did you, though? Like, are they really all gone?
Yeah. I.
And she's like, I'm going to stick around. I'm going to do some stuff here. And he's like, yeah, you could stick around, too. And you could, like, be in the guild. And he's like, no, I got to go find the kid's parents.
Yeah. But he says, but you are forgiven.
Yep.
You're, you know, you're in good standing with the guild. No one's going to come after you or the child anymore. Yeah.
It was a tidy clean-in.
It was, but – and I can see why they don't want Cara Dune going with them, because the story is of the Mandalorian and the child together traveling.
Right.
Not the Mandalorian and his love interest, who's not going to be his love interest type of thing.
Right.
But I'm sure we'll see her again next season, I would assume. At some point, their paths will cross again.
Right.
What did you think of the Jawas at the end? Going through the TIE fighter, and then Moff Gideon comes out with the, what is it called, the Darksaber?
The Darksaber.
Now, I'm going to forgive the cheesiness that it looked like, because that looked pretty cheesy, right?
I thought it looked pretty cool, but I see what you say. It was like green screened, kind
of. Yeah, I don't know, like, they've spent a lot of money on this movie, and it's almost like they kind of dropped the ball with the lightsaber. At the end, but it's the Darksaber. It's supposed to be flat. It's supposed to be. I read the history about it, it's supposed to belong to the Mandalorians and
the leader of the Mandalorians, who when they were warring with the Jedi, he actually, before he was the leader of the Mandalorians, he went to train with the Jedi, which was unheard of, because the Mandalorians, basically everything that the Mandalorians did with, like, their armor and their tactics was to counter the Jedi.
Right.
And he went and trained as a Jedi and built that Darksaber and came back and brought Mandalore under his rule and said, you know, we're going to do good things. And then when he died, the Jedi took it back. And they were like, fuck you. That's ours. But it's passed down hand. You know, it's traded off a lot of hand. Darth Maul had it for a while.
But right. And then they also, it's believed that Moff Gideon retrieved it from when he destroyed Mandalore.
Yes.
So,
which...
Because it was established that Moff Gideon had the records of Mandalore. That's the only way he would know Jin's name.
Right.
Jin's name there. And so they established that. And so if he, and then with him having the Darksaber, if he destroyed Mandalore and took their stuff, then it would make sense he would have the Darksaber.
Yep. going to be interesting.
Yeah, it is. I can't wait for season two. Like, we got to wait, like, 9 months.
Yeah. So now, yeah, now the Mandalorian is going to want to take that back when he finds out.
Oh, I'm assuming.
Because he's got to restore it to Mandalorian control.
Now, here's the thing. Is season two of The Mandalorian the next Star Wars on tap to be released?
I believe so, yes. Because it comes out in the fall.
Yeah, so this is going to be before the Obi-Wan Kenobi series?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They even started production on that one, I don't think.
Well, I think it was a good ending.
Yeah.
Great episode. Good end. Great story. Very rewatchable story. You know?
But, interesting. I was reading up a little bit more on the Darksaber. By the way, I just want to give a shout out here. Taika Waititi directed this episode.
Yeah.
This guy proves over and over again how awesome he is.
Yeah.
Like, that whole Scout Trooper thing in the beginning, you know that was him.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
So, I'm reading up on the Darksaber here, and it says the Darksaber remained a symbol of power for those who could unite the house, blah, blah, blah. Changed hands and ruler as rulers of Mandalore change until we catch up with it during the events of Star Wars The Clone Wars, which I do want to watch because it's on Disney Plus now. A descendant of the Jedi Mandalorian, Pre Vizsla, voiced by Jon Favreau.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
You know, found himself in possession of the Darksaber. So I saw something the other day. Somebody shared something with me, and it was really cool. And it said, Jon Favreau decided he wanted to do a Christmas movie. And then it showed a picture of Elf, you know, one of the most popular, widely known Christmas movies. Jon Favreau decided he wanted to do a superhero movie. He launched the MCU with Iron Man.
Right, yeah.
Jon Favreau decided he wanted to do Star Wars. We got The Mandalorian.
Yeah, who'd have thought Jon Favreau would be so awesome?
Go back and look at Swingers.
And he's not a bad actor either.
No.
He did Newsies.
He's always, like, I shouldn't say always, but most of the roles that he plays, he is an asshole. He's an overbearing, brutish asshole.
Yeah.
Even as Happy in the Marvel movies, he's like a bit of a pompous prick.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I guess he's the nicest guy. And look at the shit that he's brought us.
Yeah. No, he's yeah. He did Swingers. I said Newsies, but yeah, he wrote Swingers.
Yep.
He wrote and directed Made with him and Vince Vaughn. That was awesome, I thought. Elf. He did do Zathura.
He did what?
Zathura.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody has mistakes.
He directed it, you know. But, yeah. Iron Man 2. Cowboys and Aliens. That was his. You know? Chef, The Jungle Book. He just did The Lion King, too, though. And that was just not...
Yeah. Oh, apparently in February, Star Wars The Clone Wars, the next season starts on Disney Plus, and we're going to get a missing piece of the puzzle, which is the Siege of Mandalore.
So are we going to have to fucking watch The Clone Wars now? Because I've never actually watched The Clone Wars.
I'm going to watch The Clone Wars and Rebels. Dude, they're animated, they're Disney.
I don't like the Lego ones.
No. Fuck that.
Yeah, I don't like the Lego ones. So, it says here that Jon Favreau played Paz Vizsla in chapter 3, The Sin of the Mandalorian.
Interesting.
I don't want to be ignorant and say I didn't recognize him being in there. Was he just the voice?
Probably.
Oh, yeah. Provided the voice of Paz Vizsla. Yeah.
Okay. Which is, again, he was pre-Vizsla during Clone Wars. So that's a cool tie-in right there. You know, that's something that unless you were actually looking it up or watched all of them, you wouldn't know. So he played pre-Vizsla in Clone Wars.
Yeah. Okay. So Paz Vizsla, another Mandalorian living in the Enclave, berates Mando for working with a former agent of the Empire, against the Empire. So Tate Fletcher played the body in the suit, and he just did the voice.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
So he's played his own descendant.
And then he flies alongside using the jetpack.
Nice.
Because I was looking at Jon Favreau.
So you know he didn't die.
Right. I was looking at Jon Favreau, and as it says in Star Wars The Clone Wars, he plays Pre Vizsla. And then he's playing Paz Vizsla in this. So, okay, that's cool.
I like it.
And I like it as well. So, Mr. Robot?
I guess that's what we've got left.
All right.
Now, I think that we need to preface this a little bit by talking about your reaction to the previous week's episode.
Oh, how the ending of it?
You looked at the previous week's episode, the very end of it, and where it was an alternate reality.
Yeah.
And you were very upset.
Well, I was afraid of what I was, I was afraid of what they might do.
Right. Yeah. And you were very upset about the continuity.
Right.
Based on that.
Well, like I said, all I was thinking about was How I Met Your Mother.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That they were going to retcon everything.
Yeah.
So before we dig into it.
Sure.
Was your mind put at ease?
No.
Okay.
Not for 44 minutes.
Okay. I was talking broad strokes here.
Oh, broad strokes? Yes.
Okay.
But as we started in episode 12, Who Am I? As my note said, oh, good, 44 minutes in, it finally doesn't suck.
See, you and I had the opposite reaction because I loved it. Yeah. We were basically seeing the other end of last week's episode. All the stuff that happened. Like last week when Elliot had called and tried to get a hold of Angela's mother. And he was like, Emily? And, oh, she hung up on me. We got to see the backside of that this time, which was the fact that our Elliot was there and picked up the phone.
Yeah.
And that's why they hung up. And then the reason that there was blood and glass and everything like that was because they had dropped the drink and she went to pick it up and stupidly slashed her hand open because what the hell was she thinking?
People seem to accidentally cut themselves on a broken glass on movies and TV shows all the time that I have yet to experience in real life.
Yeah. The closest I've ever come, well, I'm sorry. The only time I've ever had glass slash my hand was I was trying to move a couch with someone, and we were going in through one of those screen doors that has glass on top and screen down bottom for some odd reason.
Yeah.
And he was twisting it, and the leg was pressing up against the glass, and I was like, you're pushing it too hard, you're pushing it too hard, you're going to break. And he goes, no, it'll be fine. And then it went snap, and my hand went right through, and
this is so weird. I'm listening to you talk about helping somebody move, and it wasn't me.
I know. It was somebody my mom was dating back in the day.
That's probably when your rule went into effect.
Yeah. Well, I had a date the next night and my finger wouldn't stop bleeding. I needed to have the doctor that I was working for at the time, working on his farm. I needed to have him come over and look at it. And he goes, yeah, you need stitches. And I needed like 3 or 4 stitches because it just wouldn't stop bleeding.
Oh, yeah.
So my hand went right through the glass. That's the closest I've ever come because I've dropped plenty of glasses or plates and I've picked them up carefully and not cut myself.
As have I. There was this one instance where this whole end cap of Yankee Candles fell.
Jesus.
There was broken glass everywhere.
Yep.
No one was lacerated.
Yeah.
Well, that was a good time. You saved me a phone call later.
Because that story never could have been told properly.
I have never, ever, ever seen someone more defeated in my life.
I know.
When I was working at Save Augusta Dispatch, I was training this fella. And he wasn't allowed to work overtime, and he needed extra money, so he got a job at Linens and Things part-time. So I'm training him in dispatch, and he's not doing the best. And John's training him at Linens and Things because John was the assistant store manager, and he's not doing the best. And John and I would commiserate how not the best this person was at doing two different jobs. And my ex-wife was notorious for her long shopping sprees, so I would go into Linens and Things and go talk to John for a few, and my wife would go shopping. And I remember I walked in the store, and I started heading kind of down to the left to go see if I could find him because I knew he was working. And I heard this tremendous crash and thunder and glass breaking and something falling. Oh, no. Well, John will be there in a moment. So I headed that way, and it was like you couldn't have timed it up better as John and I met eye to eye and acknowledged each other and then continued towards where the crash came. And we got there at the same exact time to see our trainee on the floor, broken Yankee Candles everywhere because this whole end cap of shelving just collapsed on itself. And he looks up and sees us both just standing there smiling. The shoulder sag and the head droop Sean just goes, good timing, person. Save me a phone call later.
Because essentially I was going to have to talk to Mike and say, guess what he did today?
Good times.
So, no, Mr. Robot.
I get what you're saying, but for me, I watched that first 44 minutes of this episode, of episode 9. And yes, we're seeing what is happening with this Elliot. And I'm like, I don't want this going fantasy.
Right.
Because to me, what's happening in Elliot's brain is not fantasy. To me, that's reality. This is what actually happens to people who have mental health issues.
Yep.
And I was just kind of so worried they were going to – still I was going to go there. But then as soon as our Elliot was looking at that Elliot's computer.
And he found the hidden
partition. And he found the secret partition. And my exact note is finally got good at 44 minutes in when Elliot found this Elliot's secret partition.
Yep.
And that other Elliot shows up.
And there are some comic book-esque drawings.
Yes. Of our Elliot, of Darlene, of everybody.
Trenton.
Yes.
You know, of the different F-Society people.
Mm-hmm. And I think it had a lot to do with that Elliot. If they hadn't been teasing the E-Corp and F-Corp thing back and forth...
Mm-hmm.
They would have just left it F Corp. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I loved it when that Elliot came in and they met and then they cut to commercial break. I thought that was the perfect timing for a commercial break.
Yep.
But then we see the two Elliots kind of face off and one is explaining to the other and then they touch each other and there's an earthquake. And that Elliot falls and hits his head. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, shit, he just accidentally died. But that wasn't the case.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I really liked about this building up to it, you know, I know you thought that it sucked, but A.
I just.
Your note says at 44 minutes, it finally got good.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's just because I was afraid of where they were going, and I was just like, come on, come on.
And I had said the week before, I was like, I don't think they're going to do it, because we've only got two episodes left, and Sam Esmail is a genius. Yep. So what I liked was seeing the different things and being able to pick up on it myself and say, no, this is too perfect. Yep. You know, look, there's no Darlene. There's mom is fine, healthy, gets along with the neighbors. They live out in the suburbs in a nice house.
Yeah.
You know, dad goes home and kisses the wife and then goes back out. The little girl
mm-hmm.
is now a bigger girl with her scooter. And she's like, oh, Elliot, I know your family. And
yeah.
Seeing all these different aspects that were not his life that were too perfect. And so I immediately, I was like, This is an altered state. This is a prison, essentially. So I was going with it. I was hoping it would pay off, and it did. It really
and
did.
And I have to admit that when we got the payoff,
mm-hmm.
I legitimately went, oh. And I was into it then.
Yeah.
I appreciated everything that I had previously not appreciated.
Right.
I was now appreciating thoroughly and kind of wish I could have paused it because I was watching it live.
Yep.
I wish I could have paused it so I could kind of like reabsorb everything.
Right. I will say, even though I was leaning that way, there's still the question that it could be White Rose's machine work. This is an alternate reality. And so with that possibility in my mind, watching, you know, good, we'll call him good Elliot and bad Elliot.
Yeah.
You know, watching good Elliot hit his head on the radiator and lay there and then go, help me, call an ambulance. And knowing that this bad Elliot, our Elliot, was like, no, I've got an opportunity to live this perfect life. I've got to get rid of you. And
yeah.
Watching him smother, like when he looks right at the camera and he goes, you should look away too.
Yeah, that was fucking holy fuck. My note was,
I actually felt queasy in my stomach. I'm like, I can't believe he's murdering the doppelganger of himself.
Was, holy fuck, Elliot is killing himself.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of had to look away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said that. He was like, you should look away. I'm like, it made me ill in my stomach. I'm like, I can't believe that he's doing this. I watch murder and death all the time. Oh, fuck
yeah, me too.
But this one really bothered me.
Yeah.
I was like, you can't do this. I'm thinking, if this really is the thing, how are you supposed to take over his life? How is it going to be clean? You don't have the things that he has. He doesn't have crippling anxiety like you do. He doesn't have social phobias. How are you going to pass for this guy? What the fuck are you thinking? And now you're murdering him.
Yeah.
I was disturbed.
So he murders him.
Yep.
Puts him in a box.
A moving box. Because he's got moving boxes because he's moving.
All right, two of them. And then he's trying to get rid of the body, and Dom shows up.
As a beat cop.
Yep.
Well, a parking meter cop.
Yeah, and then recognizes blood and this and that, and then she opens the box.
She says, I need to see your ID, and he hands her his wallet. Because that was the first thought. Did you leave the wallet on him? Or,
yeah.
And she says,
that's not you.
We never get to see the picture, but she says, this is Elliot Alderson's ID. And he's like, yeah. She's like, this is for Elliot Alderson. You are not Elliot Alderson.
Right.
And she draws a gun on him and tells him to get down. Because, like you said, she notices the blood and she rips open the box and she's like, you have got a lot of explaining to do.
So when she told him, you are not Elliot Alderson, you know, a little bit of me went, oh. Okay, and then I was confused at first, and then, of course, by the end, I was like, oh, you know, like, the big reveal.
Yes.
Mr. Robot shows up.
Yes, Mr. Robot shows up, and basically, just, he's defeated. He's like, what are you hoping to do? How are you going to take over this guy's life? You need to realize this isn't going to work, and here's why.
Yeah. Well, he tells him, like, we're not trapped. This is not a parallel world that White Rose spoke of. His machine never went off.
Right.
You know, and he tells him, like, it's an illusion that was created by Elliot during a morphine withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the intention of keeping the real Elliot trapped.
Well, we find that out from Krista.
Well, no, that's what Mr. Robot told him. And then he wakes up in Krista's office.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what Mr. Robot told him. Like, you know, you're trying to keep the real Elliot trapped. And then Elliot's kind of like freaking out. Like, what do you mean the real Elliot?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. And then that's when Elliot wakes up in Krista's office. And Krista, who is, we find out, also a manifestation of Elliot's mind. I don't know if
she says, Krista's helped you in the past, so we thought you'd like to hear it from her.
Yeah. And basically, she lays it out to him. This Elliot, our Elliot that we've gotten to know over these four seasons is
not our Elliot.
Is not Elliot. He is that personality that we kept waiting to see and meet, and we thought was going to come out of him when he was at Krista's office previously when they're being held hostage.
Yep. They refer to him as the mastermind.
The mastermind.
So she basically talks about how multiple personalities have been created. How the first one was Mr. Robot. And that was the first time that Elliot went out the window.
Yep.
He created the Mr. Robot personality to protect him and to be the father that he never had.
Yep.
Shortly thereafter, the mother personality was created
to
be the compassionate one, you know, the nurturing one.
Yep. The mother he didn't have.
Yes. Somewhere along the line, a child was created, which was the version of Elliot that was trying to hide from abuse and stay away from his dad. And then this version was created to protect Elliot from the world at large.
Yes.
Who basically, because Elliot always dreamed of being a hero, essentially.
Yep.
And he couldn't. So this personality was created to be that hero, to, you know, hack some people, do some good, be a vigilante.
And he trapped Elliot in this utopian world that we saw, the one without Darlene, the one with the perfect mom and the perfect dad. And he's married going to be marrying Angela. And that's what he says.
It's an endless loop.
The endless loop that he talked about at the end of episode 11.
Yep.
Yes. probably the best thing about my day is also the worst thing about my life, or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I'm just on an endless loop, because he is.
Yep. Yep. So and the mastermind locked him in there.
Yeah. And basically
and took Darlene out, because the one thing that he realized over and over again was that Darlene was his strongest connection to the real world.
Yes.
So anytime Darlene was around, it triggered him to wake up. So he took out all semblance of Darlene from that world in order to prevent Elliot from waking up.
And so Krista tells him that you have to give control back to the real Elliot.
Which made me think of Split.
Yeah.
You know, when she was talking about who's in the spotlight right now. You know,
yes.
Who has the light right now. And that's what Krista was saying. You know, you have to turn it back over to Elliot.
Yeah.
The it's
real,
his life.
The real, this is his life. You cannot live it for him.
Right.
And when Elliot refuses, that's when kind of like that world collapses.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mastermind.
Literally.
Yeah.
The roof falls on his head.
And the mastermind wakes up in the hospital. And Darlene's there. And this is an amazing scene.
You know, somebody tweeted out, they were like, just give Carly Chaykin her Emmy, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this was an amazing scene. Darlene tells him White Rose is dead. Her machine was destroyed. Oh, yeah. That's kind of like White Rose is like a hero in that utopian world.
Mm-hmm.
Her machine is destroyed. And then she also tells him that she knows that this isn't the real Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
That this is someone else, and that she had just grown to accept that this personality had taken over.
And she was
fucking crazy.
She was kind of okay with it, because this is the only time she was able to talk with her brother.
Yeah.
You know, they had been very estranged and they didn't have a good relationship, but this personality actually interacted with her. She's like, you may have treated me like a piece of shit, but we at least interacted. I had my brother around, you know, you were spending time with me.
Which Elliot wasn't.
Right.
And it's crazy, because it's just, of everybody in Elliot's world, it makes sense that he blocked Darlene out from that utopian world, because Darlene was always able to tell which personality was present.
Even to the point of that,
I almost said present.
That episode that we were talking about, you know, where they're saying goodbye in the hotel, the parking lot, and she says goodbye to Elliot and then walks like 20 feet away, looks over at Mr. Robot and says, I kind of liked you when you weren't being an asshole.
Yeah.
So,
and I love when basically the mastermind is kind of saying his goodbyes,
mm-hmm.
and then he lets Elliot take over
in a very beautiful way.
Oh, and then we get to see the world from Elliot's eyes.
Well, I love it, because like he shows up in that room that we've been, you know, that has been foretold.
Yes, yes.
You know, and there's the mother, the child, the father.
And now the mastermind.
And they're like, come on, let's go. And he doesn't want to go at first.
Yeah.
You know, but he follows them down a hallway and then into another room. And it's basically a movie theater.
Yes.
And they're all sitting there eating popcorn.
Oh my God, that was so cool.
They're going to watch life happen through Elliot's eyes.
And then we see like Elliot open his eyes, and the first person he sees is Darlene. And then,
but we're seeing it from his point of view.
Yes. And we see Darlene, like her looking at him, and then you see the expression on her face. And she realizes that this is her brother. And she greets him. And it's just crazy.
She says, hi, Elliot.
Yeah. Like, she knows this is her brother finally.
Mm-hmm. I love it when Krista called us out as the audience, too.
Yes.
You know, because he starts talking and she's like, oh, no. Remember, he did that with the other Elliot.
Yeah.
Like, he started doing his internal narration to us, the viewer.
Yes.
You know, he was like, I can't let him do this. And he goes, did you hear that? It sounded like my voice, but it was talk. Are you talking? How are you doing that?
Yeah.
And Krista actually called us out and looked right at the camera. And she's like, yeah, the ones who have been voyeuring, who think that they're not part of this, but have been completely part of this since the beginning, they want to see the end too.
Yeah.
They want to get the right answer.
You know, I was talking to my wife about, she had just finished up Friends for the third time this year. I'll just say that again for absorption purposes. My wife watched all 10 seasons of Friends for the third time this year. Finished it up yesterday. That's just too much. Anyhow, so we were discussing, because they're pulling it off Netflix. They're going to be putting it on the new HBO Max in May when it comes out.
So she'll be subscribing to that.
No, she's not going to spend $18 a month for that subscription service. You're better off buying the complete series on Blu-ray for $100. So anyhow, We were discussing satisfying series finales. Mm-hmm. I'm like, so was Friends satisfying? She's like, yeah, it was. And I talked about how the end of Scrubs was amazing, and then yes. They came back for that next season.
Ugh, they should not have.
And then, you know, How I Met Your Mother. I'll just say that.
The fifth season of Supernatural.
Yep. I mean, but Mr. Robot, exceptionally satisfying finale.
And I had made this comment last week when we were recording.
Yeah.
When I thought we were going to be talking about Mr. Robot.
Right.
Right before the spoiler section, I had said, you know, anybody who's listening, hear my thoughts. And they still ring true. Like, I put Mr. Robot as one of my top three ever watched TV series. Now, I haven't seen Breaking Bad, which everybody
I've never rants seen
and raves about.
Breaking Bad either.
So don't
I've
ask
never
me about
I
that.
Never watched Mad Men.
Nope, I didn't watch that either. But this show, start to finish, what a phenomenal, not only look at mental illness, addiction, dependency, codependency, but just a fucking amazing story. Like, the way that they were able to give us this story, give us the twists, the turns, the unexpected shifts. I just can't say enough good about this show. This was phenomenal. It's four seasons of some of the best entertainment you will ever watch. Legitimately, check this out. That's
oh yeah.
That's the best I can say, honestly. Yep. Just check this out.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. We saw a lot of story.
Yes.
In this.
Yes, we did.
You know, long episodes. Some episodes, like, they had a couple episodes that were over an hour this season.
Yep.
You know? a lot of episodes, a lot of stories, a lot of violence, a lot of everything. And if you go back to think that the Elliot that we've met and known these 45 episodes is not the real Elliot.
But you know what's even cooler? Is that we essentially, like, we saw the mastermind.
Yeah.
The mastermind came into existence when the show started.
Yeah. Yep.
And then went out of existence when the show ended.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Fucking brilliant. So the snapshot of 4 years that we got, four seasons that we got, I guess it was a couple of years in the show.
Yeah.
Was just his existence. So we've never met Elliot.
Yeah, that's true. We've never met the real Elliot, just the time warp one that was murdered.
So did you ever think, like I did for a little bit there, that when he woke up in the hospital, it was going to be somebody else, like not Rami Malek?
Oh.
At one point, I was like, is this going to turn out to be Terrell? Like, were all of these characters in Terrell's mind? Which would have been interesting, because we know that Terrell had a fucked up backstory anyway.
Yeah, no, I never considered that.
I'm definitely glad the way that it turned out. I was thinking about it, and I was like, oh, what if it's a different actor? Because, you know, Elliot is a different person.
Nope, I never considered that, but that would have been kind of crazy.
I agree.
That's it for me.
That's it for me.
Cool.
Oh, we kept it under 2 hours this week.
Somehow. Well, on the Twitter machine, I'm at SuperstarML.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K. And seriously, Martin.
Oh, hour and a half.
Yeah. Let us know what that show was that you wanted us to watch. And, you know, if it was just a joke and you wanted to make me watch a crappy movie in Carriers, well played, sir. Doff of the hat to you. But, yeah.